Tonight, we're talking about your dreams. Liminal dreaming, exploring consciousness at the edges of sleep. Jennifer Dumpere joins us, and we'll be back to jump right into this on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Our special guest, Jennifer Dumpere, with us is a San Francisco-based writer and lecturer, founder of an international organization that explores the experience of dreams as a means of experimenting with the mind. She also developed the concept and practice of liminal dreaming. We'll talk about that as well. Jennifer, welcome to the program and good morning.
Good morning to you and thanks for having me.
How did you get involved with dreams?
I've always had a very vivid dream life. A lot of my earliest memories are dreams. And I did my my graduate degrees in sort of religious studies, and I got very interested in the sort of the dimension of, you know, myth and resonance that happen in dreams, and also in the really extraordinary experiences people have in the dream world. And so I took to studying it, and also it's my experience, and that was about 20 years ago, and I've kind of been on this road ever since.
Now tell us about some of these dreams that you've studied. Liminal dreaming, which you've coined that phrase, what is that?
So liminal dreaming, the word liminal comes from the Latin limen, which is like a doorway or a threshold. And liminal dreams consist of hypnagogia, which is what happens when you're falling asleep, and hypnopompia, which is what happens when you're waking up. And they're the dream states between awake and asleep. People know about REM dreams, which are the kind of dreams you have in the middle of the night, the kind of narrative, I've gone back to high school that I never finished, or I'm in a tree with a bunch of squirrels, whatever it is. But liminal dreams are different. You're both aware of the waking world, and you're going into this very kaleidoscopic kind of swirling dream world, and you have a foot in both worlds. So it's a very unusual state, both subjectively and objectively. In terms of brainwaves, some of the strangest things happen in this very brief period of time. Everybody has the experience when you're falling asleep and it starts to get a little hallucinatory. Maybe you're trying to stay awake at a performance or waiting up for someone, or just when you're falling asleep at night and things can get a little weird, and then mm-hmm. your arm or your leg jerks. That's the hypnagogia. And then hypnopompia in the morning when you're waking up and it's very drifty. You might think you're thinking and then realize that you're kind of back in a dream. That's hypnopompia. So those two states together are liminal dreaming.
Jennifer, why are some dreams so darn real that we think, oh my God, did this happen? And it takes a while to realize it was a dream.
That happens a lot, and again, with especially with liminal dreams, because you are partly awake. I mean, you know where you are. You know that you're lying in your bed, and you can hear what's happening around you. So it can get very strange. And sleep paralysis, which is that experience that you have when you feel like you're awake, and often there's some sort of evil entity in the room, and you feel like you're awake, it can often be quite terrifying. And that's often a liminal dream experience. And it's partly because you have enough awake consciousness that you do think that you're awake. And so the dream seems very, very real because it seems like a thing that's happening while you're in your room.
Would a liminal dream be a nightmare, or is that something different?
Yeah, that's something different. Most liminal dreams are pretty value neutral. They're unlike other dreams because they don't tend to be narrative in the same way. It's not like you're a person moving through a world. Like in most dreams, you're still a person moving through a world, even if it's a weird world and you're sort of a slightly different person. But liminal dreams don't tend to be that same way. It's not like I'm moving through a world and things are happening to me. It's more kind of a free associative whirl of what's happening. So it's a very different way of experiencing your own mind.
You have talked about the inventor Thomas Edison and the artist Salvador Dali that their liminal dreaming had an interesting story about it. Tell us about these.
Yeah, so people have used liminal dreaming in lots of different ways. And I'd be happy to tell you about a few of them. One of them is creativity. A lot of people have used hypnagogia and hypnopompia, but a little bit more hypnagogia, to spark creativity. So Thomas Edison and Salvador Dali, independently of each other, came up with the same exercise. And what they would do is each man, when he was feeling sleepy, would lie, sit back in like a very comfy chair, sort of lie back in the chair. Thomas Edison held a ball in each hand, and Salvador Dali held a big brass Spanish key, and they would lay back and wait until they went into a hypnagogic state. And then as soon as they started to go out of hypnagogia and fall asleep, they would drop whatever it was they were holding, and those would hit the metal ball, the metal plates, you know, beneath what they're holding, and then they would sit up, and Edison immediately just started taking notes. He kept a notepad next to him, and Dali kept a sketch pad, and he would do sketches. And Edison came up with a lot of his inventions through working with hypnagogia. Dali came up with a lot of his ideas for art through this same process.
I wonder if Leonardo da Vinci also tapped into this.
I mean, a lot of thinkers and scientists have done so over time. The stories are innumerable, you know, discovery of the benzene ring, or, you know, Agassiz, who is one of the greatest biological chronicles of fossils, figure out how to chip away fossils in hypnagogia. Out-of-body experiences, that's another one. Bob Monroe, the legend.
Oh, he was one of the best.
He was one of the best. And so in the 1970s, when Bob Monroe was writing about out-of-body experiences, if you ever go and read his directions for how to achieve an out-of-body experience, the first steps are achieving a hypnagogic state. So you go into hypnagogia, you know, which is exactly what he doesn't tell you how to get into hypnagogia. And that's one of the things I do, is I teach people exercises for getting into these states. But he says, you know, get yourself into hypnagogia and then go through the relaxed stages of hypnagogia until you get to the place where you start to have waves and vibrations. And once you have those, then he starts in on the practices for jumping out of body, you know, getting a limb out first or what have you. But hypnagogia was also his jumping off point.
You've looked at all kinds of dreams, I assume, Jennifer, lucid dreaming, precognitive, and all those different kinds?
Absolutely.
Why are they all different?
Well, they're all different. There's a lot of reasons that they're all different. For one thing, lucid dreams happen during REM, which is a different brainwave state from hypnagogia and hypnopompia. So,
and by the way, a lucid dream, for folks who might not know, it's a dream that you can interact within it. You know you're in the dream.
You know you're in the dream, which is also true in liminal dreams. But in lucid dreams, you don't know where you are. You don't know, I'm lying in my room. You can't hear the car start outside your window,
right,
or whatever it is.
You're really in the dream.
You're really in the dream, and also usually you can control some aspect of it. So, you know, people love to fly, you know, is always kind of the first thing that people do when they're going into lucid dream spaces. But people have used it for PTSD, for controlling nightmares, for having unfinished conversations with people who have passed.
Jennifer, are you aware in the lucid dream that it's just a dream? Because to me, it feels real. And it feels like you're in the mists of something. You control it. You can direct it. You can do all kinds of things in it. But it sure seems real.
It sure seems real. I mean, I had an experience once in a lucid dream where I was stuck inside a house because I was too. I couldn't open the windows because I had no. I was ethereal, so I flew through the window, and the squeakiness of the glass passing through my body as I went out the window is a very weird experience, and I imagine what it would be like if you could pass through glass. So it does seem very, very real, although usually you do know that you're in a dream, yeah.
So you're thinking to yourself, oh, this is only a dream. You actually feel that?
Well, no, it's a little different. It's not that you think it's only a dream. You know it's a dream, and yet there's dream logic. So, for example, in the dream where I couldn't get out of the house.
Can you say things like, I can't get hurt? If somebody comes in and shoots at me, nothing's going to happen. Do you have that feeling?
A lot. You can train yourself to have this feeling, and they've worked with soldiers who suffer from PTSD, and they've taught them lucid dreaming as a way of dealing with the nightmares that are often part of PTSD. And they teach them that you can turn around and whatever is menacing you, and you can banish it or whatever it is.
You've talked about chronotypes. What are they, and how do they impact liminal dreaming?
So your chronotypes tend to be inherited. We all have energy cycles that match the sun. It's the thing we have most in common with plants. So we're all kind of on 24-hour energy cycles, which is why your energy dips in the afternoon and why you get an energy burst. But some people's are a little shorter. Some people's are a little longer. So your chronotype is the relationship that you have to your circadian rhythm. Right, so whether it's 24 hours, a little bit longer, a little bit shorter. So if you're a lark, that means you're somebody who wakes up in the morning super fresh. You jump out of bed, you're wide awake. You know, if it's a party at night, you're often the first one to get sleepy. When you work, as soon as you start working, you're freshest, and then you kind of get tired. The opposite is if you're an owl chronotype, and that is you're the last person up at the party. You wake up very slowly. Often you're a little confused for a while in the morning. When you start working, you're not as good, but you can work a long time, and the more you work, the better you get at it. And this determines how you dream. People who are lark chronotypes often have a really hard time remembering dreams. So if someone says to you, I never remember my dreams, a lot of times that just means that they have a lark chronotype, so they wake up in the morning much too quickly to actually be able to remember dreams, and so they think they don't dream. And for these people, liminal dreaming is great because you can go into nap space and find hypnagogia really easily, or you can do it as you're falling asleep at night, and instead of thinking that it's just a phase that you're passing through, you think, oh, I'm actually going to stop and pay attention to this space. People with owl chronotypes, they have really good hypnopompia. Often they can lie in bed in the morning and really find the hypnopompic space between sleeping and awake. And they have some of their best dreams in that kind of space.
What is it, Jennifer, where you can use your dream state to accomplish things, to get things done in your real life?
So for one thing, there's using it for creativity. There's using it as healing. There's the healing cult of Asclepius, which is the origin of Western medicine. In ancient Greece, they had all of these temples for healing, and that's actually where the original doctors were. You were a doctor and you were also a dream interpreter, and people who wanted healing would come to these temples and they would spend the night in the temple. And in these temples, there were snakes just free slithering all around the floor, which is why the medical symbol is a rod with a snake around it. And that's actually called a rod of Asclepius. These were temples of Asclepius because he was the god of healing. And so you would go to these temples and you would sleep there and you would dream and you would try. And the idea was that the healing would come to you in a dream. What you needed for healing would come in a dream. That's where modern dream incubation practices come from. And they work on the principle that you already know at some level what it is you need for either your mental or your physical healing. So So those are great practices. Also, just for watching how your mind works, something called autosymbolic phenomenon, which is the symbols that are in your unconscious represent your thought, but it's kind of a different language. It's different from interpretation. It's actually seeing what your thought processes are by seeing what arises in your unconscious. And because you're conscious enough in a liminal dream state to remember what's happening and perceive what's happening, and yet you can go, you can sink into these places, it allows you to sort of see your mind from a different perspective. And that's really great just in terms of consciousness exploring and in terms of understanding what the heck is going on in your mind anyway.
You have an organization that you formed, and I'm going to have you pronounce it.
The Oneronauticum.
The Oneronauticum. What the heck is that?
So Onero is from the Greek dream, and an auticum is a place where things happen. The Oneronauticum is kind of a worldwide slumber party. The next one is on June 15th. And what happens is on the night of an Oneronauticum, people around the world use the same onerogen. So an onerogen, again, from the Greek onero, which is dream, and gen, which is to create something, like generate. So an onerogen is anything that produces really vivid dreams. So it might be an herb or a root. It might be a scent or a sound, because when you're sleeping, most of your senses get turned off, so you don't act out your dreams, but not your hearing and not your sense of smell. So those make really good onerogens. There might be a practice. And on the same night, there's a couple thousand people worldwide who participate, and everybody uses the same onerogen, so that and onerogens affect dreams in different ways,
okay.
So that we're all on the same night trying to affect our dreams in the same way. So we become this worldwide community of dreamers. And, of course, dreaming is one of the most common elements of human experience, right? Everybody who exists now, whoever has existed, dreams. So it's incredibly common to all humanity, but it's also extremely personal, right? Your dream world is what's happening inside your own psyche. So to have this community of people around the world who are dreaming together, it's actually a really powerful experience and actually really affects everybody's dreams. You know, we've been doing the Oneronauticum for about a decade now, and people have started to really... So you talked earlier about different kinds of dreams people have. So a lot of people who participate in Oneronauticum, for example, are trying to encounter each other in dream worlds or to dream together. And people who've been part of this community for a really long time have started to really meld dream worlds or mesh into each other's dream worlds. It's a very strange experience, a very interesting experience.
Is it almost like what you're doing on June 15th, an experiment?
It's like an experiment. And when it started, and one of the reasons that it has such a complicated name is when I started this a decade ago, it was just a thing I was doing with my friends, and we were experimenting to see what the different effects of different onerogens would be, and I had an online, you know, kind of keeping a database of the stories, the dreams people had associated with different onerogens.
Hold on for a second, Jennifer. We're at the break already, but let's come back and pick it up right there and talk more on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Jennifer Dumpere. Her website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. It is liminaldreaming.com, but we've got the link there for you. And your book, Liminal Dreaming, Jennifer, where can people get it?
You can order it anywhere that you order books. You can buy it in a bookstore. You can get it on Amazon, what have you.
How long did it take you to write it?
It took me about a year to write it.
That's not bad.
Not too bad. A lot of it has, it talks some about the science. It talks some about the history and ways that people have used liminal dreaming. And it gives people a lot of exercises. I want to come back to one of the questions that you asked earlier about how, what are some of the ways that people can actually use it. I named a few, but another one is there's a kind of, there's versions of like automatic writing and scrying that people use with hypnagogia. So automatic writing, which is of course a very ancient practice of getting, you know, like, you know, the Enochian language that John Dee was getting in touch with, and on through the eras of people who have let some other, you know, spirit or energy or whatever move through them. So,
like Seth Speaks, that kind
of thing. Like Seth Speaks, that's exactly right. And so I have learned in the years that liminal dreaming has been my main practice, I have taught myself to both talk through hypnagogia. You know, a lot of times when people are asleep, are talking in their sleep, they're talking through hypnagogia, and also to write when I'm in a hypnagogic state. So I, with a typewriter, right, because I can touch type. Well, no typewriter, but a computer. I can touch type. So I sit back with my laptop in my lap, and I go into a hypnagogic state, and then I write whatever is happening. Or I can speak it with a voice-activated recorder, which you can buy an app for your phone, and I just, you know, lying there, and then... And it's you writing, of course, it's you talking, but in these hypnagogic zones, which is often how you're sort of getting in touch with whatever is in the world, you can really actually have the experience of a kind of a conversation through whatever comes through your hands as you're writing or comes through your own voice as you're speaking.
It is a remarkable ability to be able to tap it into this, isn't it?
It takes a little while to learn to do. I mean, everybody is a natural liminal dreamer. So lucid dreaming is very difficult. So some people are natural lucid dreamers. They can do it easily. Otherwise, you have to really practice how to do it, and you have to practice it a lot. But liminal dreaming, everybody does. That when you're drifting off and your arm jerks or your leg jerks, that's called a myoclonic jerk, you know you're in hypnagogia when that happens. And everybody knows the experience of, you know, falling asleep or trying to stay awake, and it starts to get a little dreamy and hallucinogenic. And that's hypnagogia as well. So it's actually, I mean, but most of us don't think of it as a destination. Most of it just think of as it's something that you're passing through. But it's a very, very rich liminal zone, a zone between. It's between sleep and waking. People who are dying are often in hypnagogic states.
Carl Jung, Sigmund Freud, they knew the importance of dreams, didn't they?
Absolutely. And Carl Jung also used liminal dreaming. Carl Jung was somebody who dabbled in hypnagogia, and in fact, active imagination practices are about getting into liminal dream states, getting into hypnagogia or hypnopompia, and letting whatever comes out of the consciousness, and then using creativity to kind of bring it into the world. A lot of this is about bringing what happens in those liminal zones out into the waking world.
You know, they used to say, you know, that old saying, you know, if you got a problem or an issue, sleep on it. What do they mean by that?
Well, exactly what I was talking earlier about dream incubation. Exactly the idea that there is already the answer, and that you, if you let go of the waking mind is so logical, and is so based on what we can see and, you know, and touch, and we don't actually have. We can't get as in touch with whatever voices there are inside us, in our own unconscious, whatever's happening in liminal zones, you know, in the places that we can't quite see, that our logical minds don't quite understand. And in these liminal dream spaces, as well as in any dream spaces, you can get in touch with those kinds of things. And so you bring things to light that normally you wouldn't have access to.
What would you say, Jennifer, might be one of those great stories about dreams that came your way, either in your research or with you personally? Anything?
Oh, gosh, there's so many of them. You know, I talked about people who are dying are often in hypnagogia. My aunt died year before last, and we were very, very close. And when she was the last point of her consciousness, so she was still able to talk, but she wasn't really making any sense anymore. She was kind of babbling and pre-associative. And I, since I have spent time talking to people who are in hypnagogic states or myself learning to speak through my own hypnagogic states, I recognized that she was actually in a hypnagogic state. And so I was able to kind of communicate with her and follow her dream logic, follow where she was going, and have a whole other couple, 2 or 3 weeks, where I was able to communicate with her. And I found out later that the hospice in which she was dying in Buffalo, New York, the guy who runs that hospice, a guy named Dr. Christopher Kerr, talks about the fact that people who are dying are in hypnagogic states, and it often gets medicated because people think it's delusion, because people get upset that they're being free associative, they're not making sense in a logical waking kind of way. And it's a very moving experience. And, you know, in a lot of, you know, the psychopomp, the idea that people are ferried to death, the idea that there's a liminal zone between, you know, waking and sleep, is also the liminal zone between death and rebirth, between the consciousness and the dying process. There's a lot of these liminal zones, and that we're not very practiced at moving in these in-between spaces. And part of what happens in when you're learning the liminal dream, the hypnagogia and hypnopompia, is you start to recognize these in-between spaces and linger there. And amazing things happen there.
They sure do. Have you looked at shared dreams where, you know, two separate people in two separate houses or something are dreaming and they basically share the dream?
And people who participate in my online dream community, the Oneronauticum, sometimes those people do it for various reasons, but definitely a lot of people are looking to meet each other in dream worlds. Because most people are participating remotely from around the world, they're trying to kind of find each other. And I've had some amazing stories of people who have met up with each other, and they're like, oh, there's a group of you who are sleeping in that space. There's this many men and there's this many women, and you're, you know, in a room that's this color, and people are like, yeah, you know, so people definitely have these experiences where they're kind of finding each other or looking for each other and hooking up. And again, I don't really know whether that's, you know, is it because there is a dream realm that's somewhere else? A lot of traditional people think so. Or is it because in liminal zones people can somehow be communicating with each other in ways that are beyond what our waking minds understand? I can't explain it, certainly, but people do have those experiences.
Can you train yourself to do that?
I think that you can train yourself to do almost anything that's possible to do, after all. You know, whatever it is that we do the most, whatever it is we practice doing, whether it's learning to linger in hypnagogia or complaining or playing piano, whatever it is that we spend most of our time trying to do, we become better at it. So I think as long as it's in the realm of possible, and I think there's a lot that's in the realm of possible, then absolutely you can train yourself. I know people try to develop their skills at precognitive dreams, and I know that, you know, again, people who participate in my dream community, a lot of them are trying to develop their precognitive dream abilities.
We'll take calls with you next hour, Jennifer, and questions for you as well. But you're not a dream interpreter, so we're not going to do that, right?
I am not a dream interpreter.
Even though these dreams, how come so many dreams, though, are just outlandish and strange?
Well, I mean, the mind is a very strange thing. You know, I mean, I think some dreams do lend themselves to interpretation. Some dreams obviously have something to do with what's happening in your waking world. And then other dreams are somehow stranger. You know, when you every once in a while you have one of those dreams and you're like, wow, that's a really amazing and special dream. Like a lot of people in traditional societies practice what they call oneiromancy, which is a form of divination based on dreams, where people feel that in dream realms you go to where your ancestors are. You can get in touch with your ancestors, or you go to where the spirits are, or where the gods are, and they give you teachings, right? So a lot of traditional use of oneirogens, roots, herbs, whatever, are used for this oneiromancy, for finding out what the future is going to be based on dreams. And you have those kinds of dreams. And those things aren't, all of these kinds of dreams, special dreams, the precognitive dreams, the oneiromancy, the, you know, some liminal dreams, I feel are much more about going into the experience of the dream and what is that realm offering you, or what is that language offering you. And I think it's to say that it's only relevant in terms of you in the waking world, or to say that those dreams are only you processing, you know, what happened in your day, is in a way to kind of denigrate the real power and experience that happened in some of these dreams.
Tell us about your aunt Robin, who passed on.
She was a very important and special person to me. I always had a very deep connection with her, and so to be able to go into this liminal zone with her and be able to continue to communicate with her was really an amazing and special thing. And a lot of people who use dreams, so the Tibetan Buddhists, who are the most traditional lucid dreamers, believe that between death and rebirth, we pass through something called the bardo, and the bardo is a realm that can be very, that things can attract you toward rebirth, or there can be very frightening things that frighten you into rebirth, and you're trying to learn to kind of keep your wits about you in this liminal zone between death and rebirth. And lucid dreams are kind of practice for that. Lucid dreams where you learn to avoid or not be frightened by the things that are very scary. We talked about that earlier, mm-hmm. to not be drawn by the things that are very attractive. And the Tibetan Buddhists felt like that's how you had a better rebirth, was by learning lucid dreaming so that you could go through the bardo successfully.
What is yoga nidra?
Yoga nidra is based on very ancient yogic practices. You find the earliest references to yoga nidra in the Mahabharata, which is a very ancient Hindu epic. And yoga nidra is a practice where somebody leads you in it, and you lie on, you know, you lie down, you sit up, whatever, and you listen to someone lead you into a very deep liminal dream space. And basically it's as relaxed as your body can be while your mind remains awake. And it's the space of pratyahara. It's the space between awake and asleep. It's the space between the physical body and the energetic body. So you're kind of in both at the same time. You're learning to go, to drop down into these energy bodies and these deep zones while maintaining conscious awareness, so that you can bring back what you learn from the experience. So you can go online and find NIDRA yoga nidra, and you can find lots of free people leading you through yoga nidras. Try different of them, and it's a way to teach you how to get into the liminal dream space. There's a lot of exercises that anybody can undertake to try to find these, or you can just find a yoga nidra and let somebody talk you into that space. Also great for insomnia, as is liminal dreaming in general.
Do you believe that in the dream state you can communicate with somebody? If you want a job, you think of the boss, and boom, there he is?
Belief is not a thing that I think about so often, because it's not that, for somebody who really works in the realm of dreams, I have found that, people have all have all sorts of experiences, and to believe or disbelieve them, I think, again, kind of does discredit to the experience. I mean, I think that people have all sorts of extraordinary experiences that I can't explain, whether I believe in them or not. And so I tend to really, in the work, and again, because so many people want to do the kind of dream work that I teach for lots of different reasons, I tend to say, great, that's the experience that somebody's having. That's what they're doing with it. I think it's very powerful. I think it brings all these things up.
Well, maybe that's the way to do it. Jennifer, again, give out your website, if you would, for folks.
Sure. Liminaldreaming.com. Liminal, L-I-M-I-N-A-L, dreaming.com.
And, of course, we're talking about her book, Liminal Dreaming. And when we come back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM, we're going to take your phone calls with her. It's pretty remarkable that you've been studying this. And do you tend to learn more and more the more you get into this?
Oh, absolutely. And I tend to go deeper and deeper into the practices. Like I was talking earlier about automatic writing, being able to touch type through a dream state. That's only an ability I've developed in like the last 6 months after, you know, years of doing this. I mean, it's very, very powerful, but it takes a while to learn these things. But yeah,
sure.
it just keeps deepening.
All right, more to come in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM with your calls.